and any help you need to get your program airborne. So let your mind wander and wonder. And when the inspiration for some pretty good radio glows with a clear, bright light, get in touch. Just go to WORTFM.org and look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Programs are scheduled first come, first served. And now it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
Hola y bienvenidos. Welcome to the Access Hour. I am your host, James P. Roberts, and tonight we are presenting a special program called Shared Visions, Bilingual Poetry in English and Spanish, where we will be talking about our favorite poets and how reading them in English and Spanish has affected our own poetry, perhaps. Before we begin, and my host tonight is Diego Alegría, but before we get to Diego, I'd like to give you a little background on my own early introduction to the Spanish language. I was born and grew up in Waterloo, Iowa, and went to a Catholic parochial high school, Columbus High. I had some older sisters and brothers, and one of the Columbus High textbooks that I found in our house was called El Camino Real by Edith Jarrett and Beryl McManus from 1953. And it became my introduction to the Spanish language and got me interested in trying to learn more. So when I went to Columbus High School, I took freshman Spanish, and my teacher that year was a very interesting woman named Dolores Reisinger. Interesting because she was blind. And so she would teach her classes using a Braille textbook. Well, then I went to college at the University of Northern Iowa, and I became interested not only in learning English as a writer, but also Spanish because I wanted, at some point, to be an archaeologist. And I felt the Spanish language would be very helpful in that profession. I actually had a chance to travel to an archaeological dig on the Santa Barbara Islands off the coast of California in 1984, but I had no money at that time. One of my professors at the University of Northern Iowa was a very interesting man named Samuel Nodarce from Cuba. And it turned out that at one time, Samuel Nodarce was an aide to Fidel Castro and participated in the Cuban Revolution in 1959 against the dictator Miguel Batista. And Nodarce was arrested and was for a short time a prisoner and then a refugee before he fled Cuba with his family and came to Iowa and began teaching at the University of Northern Iowa. So he was a very interesting teacher, and he had a very interesting style. In Spanish, James is normally translated as Jaime, but Samuel Nodarce insisted on calling me Diego. Well, then after high school, I went into the workforce, and Spanish sort of fell by the wayside for a long time, although I was still interested in languages. And then I went to work for American Girl, came to Madison, and it was a seasonal job. And during the season, they would hire migrant workers coming up from Texas or Mexico to work the seasonal harvests, and then for a few short weeks toward the end of the year, work at American Girl. I left American Girl in 2000 and then returned there in 2010. And by that time, the culture had changed so that most of the workforce now was comprised of migrants who spoke Spanish. and I found myself sitting at the break room table with these Spanish migrants and listening to their talk and re-immersing myself into the Spanish language. And they were a fascinating mix of people. So now I am back again, interested in the Spanish language, and that was the reason for tonight's program. Enough of me. Let's get to our guest, Diego Alegría. Diego holds a BA in English Linguistics and Literature and an MA in Literature from the University of Chile. Diego has published two books, Raíz Abierta and a bilingual chapbook, Y Sin Embargo Los Umbrales, and Yet the Thresholds. Diego is currently a doctoral candidate in English Literary Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison with a minor in Spanish and a certificate in Public Humanities. Recently, Diego gave a presentation on the poetry of John Keats, Poética del Caminar, Poems 1817, along with poems by William Wordsworth and José Martí, which I was able to attend via Zoom and enjoyed very much. Welcome, Diego.
Thank you so much, James. And what a wonderful story how Spanish intersects throughout your life, and also even the histories that are hidden there, like the Cuban teacher that you had there, the history that is behind that story, that travel to from Cuba to the U.S. And also that history of immigration that you were seeing in this in the jobs that you had, right? Very, very interesting details. That's something that historians are interested in. Specifically, they call it microhistory. So those little details that reveal larger histories, right? Thank you so much for having me here today at the Access Hour.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your own background and your involvement in Spanish language and especially poetry.
Thank you so much for the question. So I am from Chile. I grew up in Santiago, the capital of Chile. I do remember learning how to read in Spanish with the Silabario. So the Silabario is a book that was illustrated by Peneca, a very famous illustrator, that had the letters and how to pronounce syllables in the Spanish language. And once you've learned how to read, then you had some short stories at the end with beautiful illustrations. My parents used the Silabarios to learn to read in Spanish, and I also did. And I gave my my cousin, my sobrino, the Silabario too, to learn how to read in Spanish. So it's kind of a tradition, and you find it pretty easily in kiosks, like physical kiosks across Santiago. And I wanted to be a historian at the beginning when I was a teenager. I was interested in the history of Chile, mostly the 19th century, the War of Independence and the formation of the Republic. And then I was reading one historian called Mario Góngora. He's a historian of ideas. And I read one interview of his where he said he was reading Vicente Huidobro, a Chilean poet, and Rainer Maria Rilke, a German-speaking poet. So I really liked that historian, so I was like, I should go read these poets. I knew Vicente Huidobro because he's a Chilean poet, and I did a presentation in school on Vicente Huidobro, on his poetry, in front of school and everything. And my dad also like writes poetry. He's also a poet. He's a painter and artist, but also a poet. And then everything changed because I was reading a book called Altazor by Vicente Huidobro. And that's how it's pronounced also in English, Altazor. You can find that book easily. There are some translations. And I didn't understand anything, but I was so moved by the images that this poet was able to do. He's part of the movement, an avant-garde movement called Creacionismo, creationism, that what tries to do is to create images that cannot be found in nature. So it's against imitation of nature or imitation of reality. And yeah, it blew my mind. And I started writing some poems by then. So I wrote this poem. I still remember the poem. It's very short. It says, caí de un rostro a otro rostro. En esa inmensidad encontré el silencio. It's a very short poem. It says, like, I fell from one face to another face. In that immensity, I found silence. And there was a poetry award call. So I sent the poem to this poetry award, and I won the award. And the award consisted of going to Valparaiso to one of Pablo Neruda's houses, the one that is in Valparaiso, La Sebastiana. And there were other poets from different generations, from the 80s, from the 90s. And they really liked the poem, that it was very economic. It was very subtle and also existentialist, the idea of like falling from one phase to another phase and the idea of silence. And I do remember coming back from Valparaiso to Santiago in the bus and thinking I would like to like pursue a career, a literary career where I can write poetry and read poetry. So I decided that was what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be. I was 16 years old. And then I was struggling what to study. In Chile, you have to decide before taking the exams to get into college. Mm. So I was between English literature and Spanish literature. Mm. And my dad and my mom, they both were, think the one like, you will learn a lot, of course, but also the one that's gonna, like, you can earn a better kind of stipend or bill, like, to pay the bills and everything. English seemed to be the best one, because I could be a translator or work as a diplomat or something. So I decided English literature, and I love English literature. I really loved English literature because it was very economic as the writing I was composing during that time. So I decided to study English literature. And well, I studied at the University of Chile. Many poets have studied there. It was very stimulating. I read a lot of poetry in translation at home. My brother and I, we both learned English in school. We went to a British school, but my parents did not know how to speak in English. So my dad had many translations of poetry. So I would read Joseph Conrad, Virginia Woolf, T.S. Eliot, or Emily Dickinson. I would read them in translation first. And then when I was studying the bachelor's degree, I started reading them in English, which was fascinating. So I actually, my brother gave me The Waves by Virginia Woolf, which was my favorite novel back then. So I decided to read the novel in English once I finished the bachelor's degree. That was like my goal. And then I liked scholarship, how to navigate both worlds, creative writing, but also scholarly work, writing essays. So I decided to continue studying in Chile, the master's in literature. That one is in Spanish. The bachelor's degree was in English. But I wanted that time, those 2 years, to write in Spanish, to write essays in Spanish, to come back to Spanish. And then I came here in 2019. That's when I started the English program. But also I did my minor in Spanish American literature, mostly poetry. So that's been a little bit my trajectory. But I wanted to focus on, like, when I learned how to read in Spanish and the moment where I, like, started to think maybe I should compose poems. Yeah. For a living, yeah.
Well, on my way here tonight, I came up with a phrase that I just love, describing the Spanish language as a language that caresses the tongue.
Oh yeah, that's a really great.
It's so flowing.
That's a great description. Yeah.
It doesn't have harsh consonants that, you know, force you to stop, but it continues on and on like a river.
Yeah.
And what I like to do when I find these bilingual editions of poetry in Spanish and English is I will read the Spanish version first and then the English translation so that I can get a sense of the sounds, the cadence, the phrasing, and then I will reread the Spanish version and try to implement those into the Spanish version of the poem. There, so that I can get a more familiar understanding of what the poet is trying to say.
Yeah, and I really like that method. Thinking of the original in terms of the prosody, so the rhythmic patterns, and to think about the phrasing in terms of not only how we versify, how we compose lines, compose verses, but also how we arrange words in the page, right? How we play with syntax. And this reminds me of something that was in my mind when I decided to study English. Vicente Huidobro and Pablo Neruda, they studied French, not Spanish literature, like their bachelor's degree. Why? Because French was the lingua franca back then, not English, and they wanted to learn those poets in order to get to know their language, the Spanish language, better. And that was one of the reasons also why I decided to study English, so that I could get more acquainted get more conscious about the Spanish language. And I think some of the poets that we'll read today will speak about the Spanish language. So we are going to think about and feel the Spanish language and different versions of the Spanish language through these poets. I'm very excited to read them.
Well then, why don't we get started? That was a wonderful segue.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's
so
a good.
So, what
transition
do you have to share with us right now?
So, I'm very interested in a movement in the Spanish-speaking letters that is modernismo. So, I'm doing my PhD on the history of poetry through the lens of syntax, through the lens of how we arrange words in the 19th century. And I'm focusing on Romanticism and Modernismo. And Modernismo is a movement that's different from the English Modernism, like Eliot, Joyce, Wolfe, D.H. Lawrence, H.D. So Modernismo is a movement that is at the end of the 19th century. Generally, they scholars frame Modernismo between 1880 and 1920, right before the avant-garde movements. So in the English-speaking tradition, Modernism is our avant-garde in Spanish America, and in France too. So I'm studying those poets, and I think our listeners will remember some of them. José Martí. So José Martí is the Cuban liberator, was a poet, an essayist, and also an orator. And he prompted a renovation of Spanish-American letters. Why is he very important? He treated prose as a poem, as a poetic composition. So it's the texture of his texts is very filled with figures, with tropes, with metaphors. And he changed the style of the Spanish language. And I want us to read one of his poems that is very programmatic. It tells us his idea of not only his idea, but also his practice of poetry. So I would like you to read the English version, and I'm going to read the Spanish version. And I'm going to say also the problem with the translation as well. Okay?
Okay, so this is entirely impromptu. I've never read this poem before, so. Against rhetorical poetry. Against rhetorical and ornate verse, natural poetry. Here, a torrent. There, a dry stone. Away off, a golden bird gleaming in the green boughs like an Indian crest among emeralds. Here, the foul and slimy track of a worm, its eyes, two bubbles of mud, its underbelly brown, fat, and filthy. High above the treetops, in the steely heavens, a lone fixed star. Down below, an oven, by whose heat the earth is baking. Flames, battling flames, with open holes for eyes, tongues for arms, sap like human blood, razor tips like those of a sword. The sword of life, that flame by flame shall gain the earth at last. It climbs, it comes from within, it howls, it fails. Man starts out in fire and ends up in wings. As he passes, victorious, the disgraced, the lowly, the cowards, the conquered, like serpents, like whelps, like crocodiles with two rows of teeth. From all points, from the tree that gives him shelter, from the ground that holds him, from the stream where he slakes his thirst, from the very anvil where his bread is forged, they bark at him and nip his feet, sling mud and kick dust in his face, all that can blind him on his path. But with a single flap of his wings, he sweeps the world away and rises on up through fiery space, dead as a man and as a peaceful sun. Thus should noble poetry be, and so too life, star and whelp, a cave nibbled at by fire, a pine tree in whose sweet-smelling branches, by the light of the moon, a song comes forth from a nest. A song comes forth from a nest in the moonlight.
Wow. I love your reading, James, and how you you amplified the enumerations that happened. So I'm going to read it in Spanish. Contra el verso retórico y ornado, el verso natural. Acá un torrente, aquí una piedra seca. Allá un dorado pájaro que las ramas verdes brilla como una marañuela entre esmeraldas. Acá la huella fétida y viscosa de un gusano, los ojos dos burbujas de fango pardo, el vientre craso inmundo. Por sobre el árbol, más arriba, sola, en el cielo de hacer una segura estrella, y a los pies el horno a cuyo ardor la tierra cuece, llamas, llamas que luchan con abiertos, huecos como ojos, lenguas como brazos, savia como de hombre, punta aguda, cual de espada, la espada de la vida, que incendio a incendio gana al fin la tierra, trepa, viene de adentro, ruge, aborta. Empieza el hombre en fuego y para en ala. I will stop there in this stanza. What did you think about this poem, James?
I found it very, forceful. Mm-hmm. I found it very emphatic. And I found it very demonstrative.
Yeah, yeah. I really like what you say in terms of demonstrative. Let's remember, it says like here a torrent, there, right? It's indicating and it's creating that space. And Martí is very interested, as the translation says, so against the rhetorical and ornate verse, the Spanish original says the natural verse, not natural poetry. He's thinking about the verse, that unit, and the verse is composed by phrases more than sentences. That makes the image much more vivid, forceful, demonstrative, as you said. So there's an idea of poetry which is natural in the sense that we have natural elements that are represented, but at the same time it seems as poetry emerges from nature and emerges by means of phrases. In some ways, yeah.
That was wonderful. You are listening to the WORT Access Hour. I am your host, James P. Roberts, and tonight we are sharing visions, bilingual poetry in English and Spanish with my guest, Diego Alegría. Now, to continue, I mentioned earlier that I had studied Spanish for 3 years at the University of Northern Iowa. And in that third year, I took the course with Samuel Nodarsi called Spanish Composition and Conversation. And it was an advanced level course. So we spent some time doing translations from Spanish poets to English poets. And I have with me my college notebook. And one of the Spanish poets I attempted to translate was Amado Nuevo. And his poem, Serenidad. So I'm going to read my attempt at this translation in both Spanish and English, and Diego can correct me if I make any mistakes. Serenidad. He desdeñado todo lo pequeño y tranquilo. Enigmático y sueño. Paso la vida mía helando la hebra de oro de mi ensueño en la hueca de mi melancolía. Si mis rimas fuesen bellas, enorgullecerme, de ellas no está bien, pues nunca mías han sido en realidad. Hay oído me las decía no sé quién. Yo no soy más que el acento del arpa que hiere el viento velo. No soy más que el eco débil, ya jubiloso, ya flebre de una voz. Quizás a través de mí, ma departiendo entre sí dos almas llenas de amor. En un misterio estío, y yo no soy más que el hilo conductor. Here, scorn with everything that is small and gentle, enigmatic, delightful, let it pass through my life. You spinner of threads of gold, of this my dream in the circle of my melancholy. If my rhymes were of beauty, full of pride and such, this is not good, because never in my reality, to who hears me, I am speaking, I know not who. I am not much that the emphasis of the harp, that instrument of the wind, quickens. I am not much that the feeble echo, now jubilant, now relegated to mere sound. Perhaps to the misfortune of my going, converse or saying, if two souls fill with love in one mysterious use, and I am not much that the thread leads.
Nice. Wonderful translation. Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
I think it...
Me sorpreso.
Yeah. Wonderful. Amado Manero is actually... It's a poet also from Modernismo, from that movement. And what's different between Martí, that we read just minutes ago, and Nervo, Amado Nervo, is... Amado Nervo prefers like the lyric I, right? The I, mm-hmm. Yo.
I am not much that.
Exactly. And also we could say is more pathetic, but in the sense of focusing on emotions, that expression. And Nervo usually employs statements that are more didactic. Mm. In the case of Darío, you have those statements, but are not generally didactic. I'm thinking in the poems that are from that collection called Free Verses, Versos Libres. But Amado Nervo, actually, this is very funny. I live in Chile. My house in Chile is in a street called Almirante Gómez Carreño. Not a very interesting person. But the next street is Rubén Darío, and the next street is Amado Nervo. So many modernista poets are inhabiting that neighborhood.
Wonderful. Is there anything else you would like to share with us?
I think I would like to share a poem by Delmira Agustini. She was born in Montevideo, in Uruguay. Mm-hmm. And Rubén Darío wrote a preface to one of her works, if I'm not mistaken. And Delmira Agustini forged an erotic and very metafictional poetry that was characterized by unfamiliar metaphors. And the titles of her books are quite evocative. So we have El Libro Blanco, The White Book, Cantos de la Mañana, Morning Songs, and her most famous one, Los Cálices Vacíos, Empty Chalices, I think that's how you pronounce it. And I brought one poem called The Wings, Las Alas. And I think we can read that one, that complete poem. It's not that long, but it has very different rhythms across it.
Once again, I am doing the English version and Diego the Spanish. The Wings. I used to have two wings living off the azure like two roots in space, two wings with all the miracles of life, death, and illusion, two wings incandescent like the canvas of a star in flight, two wings like two firmaments, like two storms with calm and stars. Do you recall the glory of my wings? The rhythm of their aureate tolling? The ineffable hue filling the entire iris? but a new iris, obfuscating and divine, adoring the full pupils of the future, pupils mature in full light. That flight, the burning flight, devouring and unique, which long tormented the heavens, awoke suns, large meteors, storms, lighted the rays and the stars and their amplitude, enough heat and shade for the entire world, that even of incubating a beyond were they capable. One day, strangely fainted upon the earth, I fell here asleep on the deep plush of the forest. I had divine dreams. A smile of yours awoke me, I think, and I did not feel my wings. My wings? I saw them dissolving in my arms, as if something were melting.
Thank you. That I love how you deliver this poem differently from Martí's one, right? So I'm going to read it. Las alas, yo tenía dos alas. Dos alas que del azur vivían como dos siderales raíces. Dos alas con todos los milagros de la vida, la muerte y la ilusión. Dos alas fulmíneas como el velamen de una estrella en fuga. Dos alas como dos firmamentos con tormentas, con calmas y con astros. ¿Te acuerdas de la gloria de mis alas? El áureo campaneo del ritmo, el inefable matiz atesorando el iris todo, más un iris nuevo, ofuscante y divino, que adorarán las plenas pupilas del futuro, las pupilas maduras a toda luz, el vuelo ardiente, devorante y único, que largo tiempo atormentó los cielos, despertó soles, bólidos, tormentas, abrillantó los rayos y los astros y la amplitud, tenían calor y sombra para todo el mundo, y hasta incubar un más allá pudieron. Un día, raramente desmayada la tierra, yo me dormí en las felpas profundas de este bosque. Soñé divinas cosas, una sonrisa tuya me despertó, paréceme, y no siento mis alas. ¿Mis alas? Yo las vi deshacerse entre mis brazos. Era como un deshielo.
Yeah. I think I read that poem differently because it had to be in a woman's voice there. And so I gave it more of a breathless, emotive reading.
Yeah. And what's interesting is listeners might remember Emily Dickinson with the ellipsis.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have many ellipses across the poem. It's interesting too how the speaker in the poem is unsure about the effects, about what's happening to their wings, mm-hmm. right? So sometimes we have exclamation marks like, mis alas, my wings. But then the next line is, my wings? Like, are they there? And the idea of the poem, the El Deshielo, which I don't know the English translation of it, like melting.
Mm-hmm.
Deshielo means that an ice melts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So deshielo, the word still has the noun hielo, right? And it's interesting how the poem uses that one. In the case of the English word melting, we don't see the ice, right? Mm. In the word, or we don't project it in our mind, which is different, right? So But very interesting poem, and how it unfolds this process of having wings, and the relationship of wings, birds, and poetry is long. It has a long tradition, right? But here, it seems like the poem ends when, do I still have the wings, right? So it's a metapoetic reflection on the composition itself, right?
Right.
Yeah. So very interesting poets indeed.
And I'm glad you mentioned a Uruguayan poet, because I've recently come across two books that are translations of Uruguayan poets by a professor here at the University of Northern Iowa, Jesse Lee Kercheval. And the poets are Sergio Maya and Luis Bravo there. And, well, the first bilingual poetry book that I can remember purchasing was this one, Poem of the Deep Song, Poema del Cante Yondo by Federico Garcia Lorca. There. And I enjoy these poems because they are very short and they are easily understandable and translatable. So, how about if I read the English version and you can read the Spanish version?
Perfect.
The guitar. The weeping of the guitar begins. Wine glasses shatter in the dead of night. The weeping of the guitar begins. It's useless to hush it. It's impossible to hush it. It weeps on monotonously the way water weeps, the way wind weeps over snowdrifts. It's impossible to hush it. It weeps for things far, far away, for the sand of the hot south that begs for white camellias, weeps for arrows without targets, an afternoon without a morning, and for the first dead bird upon the branch. O guitar, heart gravely wounded by five swords.
Wow. Very nice translation. For those of you who are listening, did you notice the alliterations? Like the repetition of the way water weeps, the way wind weeps? Not only the words that are repeated, but the sounds, right? The W sound. Let's see if that happens in the Spanish version. I forgot this poem by Lorca. So Lorca is a poet. So we've been in Latin America. We read Martí, we read Amado Nervo, we read Delmira Agustini, Modernismo, and now we're moving to Spain. Very interesting move, because Modernismo was a Spanish-American movement. Rubén Darío was the main figure, and he modernized, all these poets modernized Spanish-speaking letters. So it's a modern movement. And García Lorca comes from the generation of the 27, more turning into avant-garde poetics. For those of you who have read Lorca, you might remember a great book, Poet in New York, right? Very with surrealist images. So here's the Spanish original. La guitarra. Empieza el llanto de la guitarra. Se rompen las copas de la madrugada. Empieza el llanto de la guitarra. Es inútil callarla. Es imposible callarla. Es imposible callarla. Llora monótona como llora el agua, como llora el viento sobre la nevada. Es imposible callarla. Llora por cosas lejanas. Arena del sur caliente que pide camelias blancas. Llora flecha sin blanco, la tarde sin mañana, y el primer pájaro muerto sobre la rama. Oh guitarra, corazón malherido por cinco espadas. And as I was reading this, a very short comment. Just hear the sound. Llora monótona. Llora. Does it sound like the guitar?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It does.
Llora monótona como llora el agua, como llora el viento, sobre la nevada. Es imposible callarla. Callarla. Yeah, it's impossible to like to
it's Replicates the strumming of a guitar.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very. In fact, it could probably be translated into a song.
Exactly.
It probably has been done so.
Yeah.
Another poet that I recently discovered is Gabriela Mistral. And the copy that I have, I actually found it in a little free library. I selected poems of Gabriela Mistral, translated by Ursula K. Le Guin, who is better known as a writer of science fiction, but also was an anthropologist. She had a very famous anthropologist father, and she actually created a whole anthropological world, which she describes in a book called Always Coming Home, in which she invented her own language as well. And the book came with a cassette of songs in that language. And I wish I'd have brought it with me.
Wow.
But Mistral is another poet, I think, very much like Lorca, in that she relies a lot on repetition.
Yeah.
This is a song, a poem called Sea Songs, Song of Those Who Seek to Forget. And once again, I will read it in English, and you can do the Spanish.
Excellent.
To the side of the boat, I've nailed my heart. To the side of the boat, where the foam crests part. Wash it with unceasing salt. Wash it, sea. Wash it, sea. You're for consolation. The land's for misery. To the strong prow, my heart is nailed. Look, boat, you're leaving blood in your wake. Wash it with tremendous salt. Wash it, sea. Wash it, sea, or break it on the prow and set me free. On the ship, I've loaded all the rubbish of my life. Change it, sea. In the 100 days, you'll have it for your wife. Change it, sea, with your 100 winds. Wash it, sea. Wash it, sea. Give your gold and pearls to other, but give forgetfulness to me.
Wow. Love it. A really beautiful edition as well. It's from New Mexico University Press. And really great editions. Also Pittsburgh, where Jesse Lee published the translation. And University of Texas Press and Duke University Press. Good presses on Spanish-speaking poetry. Okay. Canciones en el mar, canción de los que buscan olvidar. Al costado de la barca, mi corazón he apegado. Al costado de la barca, de espumas ribeteado. Lávalo mar con sal eterna. Lávalo mar, que la tierra es para la lucha y tú eres para consolar. En la proa poderosa mi corazón he clavado. Mírate barca que llevas el vértice ensangrentado. Lávalo mar con sal tremenda. Lávalo mar. O me lo rompes en la proa que no lo quiero más llevar. Sobre la nave toda puse mi vida como derramada. Muda la mar en los 100 días que ella será tu desposada. Muda la mar con tus 100 vientos. Lava la mar, que otros te piden oro y perlas. Y yo te pido el olvidar. Wonderful poem. And, well, Gabriela Mistral won the Nobel Prize in 1945. And she's from Chile.
Yes.
Yeah, it's another poet with Neruda who have been awarded the Nobel Prize for their literary work.
Is there one more poet that you would like to share with us?
Oh yeah, I think this sonnet by Rubén Darío is an important one because it talks about the those moments in which writing seems to control us in some ways as poets. So it's the moment where we are writing, we think we have control over what we are writing, but then the text itself seems to like run its own course. And it's a very important poem in terms of modernismo. Darío was a poet from Nicaragua, and he was a cosmopolitan poet. He went very young to Chile, to Valparaíso and Santiago, published a very important book called Azul, Blue, with short stories and poems. Then went to Buenos Aires, which was a big capital in, still is, but a big capital for the Spanish American letters. Went to Paris, went to Madrid, Barcelona, came back to Central America. So a very interesting poet. And this is a short poem, a sonnet, that's written with long verses. And that was one of his innovations. He adapted French meter into the Spanish language. So here's the English version. I seek a form.
I seek a form that my style cannot find, a bud of thought that seeks to be a rose. It is augured by a kiss that alights on my lips in the impossible embrace of Venus de Milo. Green palm leaves grace the white colonnade. The stars foretold to me the vision of the goddess. An illumination settles on my soul as the moon bird reposes on a placid lake. And not do I discover but that the word flees. The melodious initiation that flows from the flute. The ship of dreams set sailing through all space and under the window of my sleeping beauty. The sobbing of the waters of the fountain and the neck of the great white swan that questions me.
Thank you. Yo persigo una forma que no encuentra mi estilo. Botón de pensamiento que busca ser la rosa. Se anuncia con un beso que en mis labios se posa al abrazo imposible de la Venus de Milo. Adornan verdes palmas el blanco peristilo. Los astros me han predicho la visión de la diosa, y en mi alma reposa la luz como reposa el ave de la luna sobre un lago tranquilo, y no hallo sino la palabra que huye, la iniciación melódica que de la flauta fluye, y la barca del sueño que en el espacio boga, y bajo la ventana de mi bella durmiente, el sollozo continuo del chorro de la fuente, y el cuello del gran cisne blanco que me interroga. This is a very interesting poem with the figure of the swan, the white swan.
Mm-hmm.
It's an animal that inhabits the poetry of Rubén Darío. It's the symbol of absolute beauty. But later, when you have avant-garde poets like Neruda and Huidobro, they usually have images of the swan being killed. So in reference to Darío, that they are like developing a different kind of poetic style, a different kind of poetics. But that poem was very canonical. And it's interesting to see how the speaker cannot catch the word, because the word flees, la palabra huye, right? Thank you so much for that reading, James.
And thank you for mentioning Neruda, because that's who we're going to discuss next. And I would recommend anyone who wants to learn the process of Spanish and English reading bilingual editions to begin with Neruda's The Book of Questions. These poems are written in short couplets, and I'd like to share a few of those with you now, while we have a few minutes left. Si he muerto y no me he dado cuenta, ¿a quién le pregunto a la hora? If I have died and don't know it, of whom do I ask the time? Dime, ¿la rosa está desnuda o solo tiene es vestido? Tell me, is the rose naked, or is that her only dress? Let's see. ¿Qué sigue pagando el otoño con tanto dinero amarillo? What does autumn go on paying for with so much yellow money? ¿Y quién pidió a la primavera su monarquía transparente? And who asked springtime for its kingdom of clean air? Puedo preguntar a mi libro si es verdad que yo lo escribí? Am I allowed to ask my book whether it's true I wrote it? ¿Dónde encontrar una campaña? ¿Dónde encontrar una campaña que sueñe adentro de tus sueños? Where can you find a bell that will ring in your dreams? Such wonderful phrasing and language.
Yeah,
from the
yeah.
Ruda.
And interesting because he was playing with the couplet form in a period of his... Neruda has different stages in his life. And the Book of Questions is the time when he wanted to make his poetry more accessible to people. But he was still playing with lots of forms. His writing became much more... verses were smaller, with less words than his initial poetry. And the rhetoric of questions more than declaration statements.
Well, to finish off our show, I have, maybe presumptuously, translated one of my own poems into Spanish. And this is from my most recent collection, 100 Breaths, as in breathing. And I shall read the Spanish version first, and then the English version. Campañas de cruce. Señalan una advertencia que algo se acerca rápidamente y será mejor que te apartes del camino porque este objeto tiene un destino y un horario para cumplir si es para satisfacer todas nuestras necesidades. El día es brillante y soleado y todo lo que hay en el mundo es ese sonido lejano de lo que sabemos que viene. Crossing bells, they signal a warning that something is fast approaching, and you better get out of the way, for this object has a destination and a time schedule to meet, if it is to meet all our needs. The day is bright and sunny, and all there is in the world is that distant sounding of what we know is coming. Well, I'd like to thank Diego Alegría for being my guest on tonight's program, and I'd like to thank Emmett at the soundboard and Adrian Rainey for putting together this show. Thank you, and have a wonderful evening.
Thanks.
You've been listening to The Access Hour. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on The Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. Remember, though, that this show relies on your ideas. An application to produce a program can be found on the internet at wortfm.org. Look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Music, talk, comedy, drama, or whatever can be conveyed over the radio, the Access Hour is anything you want it to be.
The WORT Board of Directors will hold its regularly scheduled meeting on Wednesday, March 20th at 7 p.m. virtually via Zoom. The public is welcome to attend. For instructions on how to attend this meeting, email president@wortfm.org.
You've been listening to WORT, Back Porch Broadcasting, Madison. Next up is Something Wonderful with Ryan Parks.
Hey, I'm Keiko from Crash Faster, and you are listening to Ryan Parks on Something Wonderful, WORT 89.9 FM, Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to listener-supported community radio.
The WORT Board of Directors will hold its regularly scheduled meeting on Wednesday, March 20th at 7 p.m. virtually via Zoom. The public is welcome to attend. For instructions on how to attend this meeting, email president at wortfm.org.
Something in the sky, it's gotta be the truth. Can you tell me why I always turn to you?